Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with Benchmark Senior Living CEO Tom Grape. The Waltham, Massachusetts-based senior living provider operates 66 communities in 8 states. Benchmark is continuing to grow its portfolio through ground-up development, having recently entered the Washington, D.C. market with the Benchmark at Alexandria, while continuing construction on another community in New York. With occupancy recovery at hand, Benchmark has surpassed 90% census and is focused in 2024 on integrating new systems that Grape called foundational infrastructure while stabilizing new developments and reinvesting into over 30 existing communities.
So we've got a lot going on that's all about sort of our infrastructure and our existing portfolio. At the same time, we opened Alexandria. We're going to be opening another community later this year in Mount Pleasant, New York, and we're getting ready to start construction on 2 new development projects.
Now, here's my interview with Benchmark Senior Living CEO, Tom Grape. Tom, thanks so much for joining us here on Transform. It's great to have you.
You bet, Austin. Nice to be with you.
And let's dive right in. And I think a great place to start would be to discuss what's new with Benchmark. And we know that there is a new community in Alexandria, and we'd love to get the latest update you can share on just the expansion to the Washington, D.C. market.
Sure. Well, we're very excited to open Benchmark at Alexandria. We opened it in early April. It's a 115-unit community of assisted living and memory care. It's a 10-story building in a mixed-use development, and we're off to a great start and very excited to be there. It's a terrific building and been very warmly received in the community.
And I know that the community is also, we had received a press release about incorporating some elements of value-based care. And so we'll touch on that in a little bit, but would love to get a rundown from you. What were some of the project amenities that you could highlight that maybe are popular or some things that really help separate the community from some existing properties in the area? Because we know it's a highly competitive market.
Yeah. Well, we're in a nice neighborhood niche of Alexandria, a little differentiated from the others. We've got some beautiful spaces in the building. It's got an open chef's kitchen, 5 indoor and outdoor dining venues. It's got a club room, casual bistro and cafes. It's got a massage room, fitness center, wellness center, you know, a lot of nice amenities as you'd expect in a new building. But to me, the things that set it apart are it's a 10-story building in a mixed-use development. So to me, a high-rise building with a beautiful roof deck from which you have views of the Washington Monument and the Capitol, and I'm hoping to get down there for the July 4th fireworks myself to see them from the roof deck. And but being part of a mixed-use development to me is, I think, a trend that we're going to see more and more of in senior living. And, you know, the development itself has a grocery store, a diner, some other housing in it, also a child care center, an urgent care center. It's got a whole lot of great other uses that I think is, again, a great complement to our community. So this is the kind of thing that we're looking to do more of in the future. So I think that's, to me, the real distinguishing factor of this community.
And with the community in Alexandria, had, just as a follow-up here, had that mixed-use component always been part of the project? Had that been a goal from being able to bring in some public-facing components and also to help foster those intergenerational connections we're always talking about, I think, within the industry? Would love to know just if that was always part of the plan.
Yeah, absolutely. That was very much what we were looking for. And so we were actually the last component to be built, but it was part of what attracted us to that site was the fact that we could be part of this mixed-use development with all those other uses. So very much part of the strategy of that project.
Great to hear. And now would love to discuss some of the challenges, if any, that had come up along the way in developing the Alexandria community. Would love to know how you overcame those. We know that Anytime you're doing new development, sometimes those construction timelines can be a bit fluid, and sometimes things are out of the senior living operator's hands in terms of construction material delays or supply issues. So were there any challenges along the way? Would love to know just how the construction process went and how the development process was overall.
We actually had a great development team, a great contractor, so we didn't have any of the supply line challenges, which I'm pleased to say, given that we did this during, much of it was built during COVID, so there were supply challenges that others have, but we fortunately did not experience that. We did experience increase in interest rates, so that wasn't so great. And I think the only other thing was for us, this is our first community in the DC market, so Benchmark was not as well known in that market. And yet, I would say to you that when we had the grand opening event, we had our biggest turnout ever at any grand opening we've had. We had over 250 people there, and I think have been more warmly received in this market than we could have possibly hoped for. And again, the early move-in results and marketing response has been terrific. So we were concerned about being, you know, a new market for us, but so far we've been very pleased with the results.
That's great to hear. And I know one of the other things that some new starts are down across the industry, some newer communities are really having success in driving demand to their new developments. I think it's playing out for Benchmark as well. So that's great to see. And Tom, I know you mentioned when you were at our build event in 2022, you had described Benchmark as a company that had spanned from Boston to DC, but obviously had only been part of the top half of that equation. Now you're in the DC market. What's it been like integrating into the new market? It sounds like the demand is there. Sounds like you've been able to generate a lot of interest, but how has integrating into DC been for Benchmark overall?
Well, again, I mentioned our early response has been better than we really could have hoped for. But I honestly, we're only a few months in, but so far the early response has been very, very positive. The community's welcomed us warmly. City of Alexandria was great to work with. It is excited that we're there. Marketing results so far have been very positive. Check back with me in 6 months or a year, and I'll tell you how it's gone since then. But early results so far have exceeded our expectations, so we're very pleased.
Well, that's great to hear, and congratulations. I know new development can take a village to be able to make work.
Bet. Absolutely. Everyone does. You bet.
Yeah, especially in today's environment, especially we know that a lot of the projects coming online now have really come through a lot of the pandemic era challenges that were really out of the hands on the construction side of things for operators. So great to hear that the Alexandria project went well. Now, I want to shift to and touch on the value-based care component within the Alexandria community through the partnership with Curana. We know that there are some aspects of value-based care that will be part of that partnership with Curana. Do you want to explain how that effort started? And then we can get into some other topics on value-based care as well, because I think there's a lot of interest right now in particularly in value-based care within senior living.
Sure. Well, first of all, it goes a little bit even beyond Curana. Servium has a Virginia alliance of a number of communities, and Curana is part of that alliance. So we've joined the Servium Virginia Value-Based Care Alliance. I think there are 40 communities in it. Don't hold me to that number. So we were pleased to become part of the Servium Virginia Value-Based Care Alliance, and Curana is part of that Servium group. So results are, again, early. The alliance is in its formative stages, but we're pleased to be part of it, and that's a great way for our Alexandria community to also be fitting into the community at large. So we're very pleased to be part of it.
And with the partnership, I think one of the things that we're hearing from operators when it comes to value-based care is that they just want to be able to be part of the conversation and to get in the arena to be able to join these types of partnerships, because there's going to be so much change, I think, on the care side. And as we move forward in the industry over the next 5 to 10 years, potentially some future federal regulation that might come down. So obviously operators want to have a seat at the table when those changes get made. So do you want to just talk about where you see the value-based care movement in senior living evolving and just where it's at right now? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a little less focused on the federal regulation part of it at the moment. We're all obviously watching that very carefully, but I'm more focused on how we can improve the resident experience. And to the extent we can make the provision of care easier for the resident and more hassle-free, which to me, by having on-site medical care, more seamless with electronic medical records, with this coordinated with the primary care docs and coordinated with the specialists that are accessed through the alliance, I think that's better for everybody. So to me, value-based care, I think coordinated with senior living makes great sense, and I think is a very bright part of the senior living industry's future. I think to me, the easy part of value-based care is and the logical part is getting docs on site and coordinating with electronic medical records and having specialists play a role. To me, the part that remains to be seen, the less clear part, is the risk-taking part and what role senior living providers are going to choose to play and how it will work when folks choose to take a little bit of risk or a lot of risk with Medicare Advantage plans. I think that, to me, is the part that has a lot still to play out, but I think it's easy to make the decision to bring docs on site and have a more integrated provision of care versus the less coordinated model that's been the case for much of the industry to this point. So to me, that's easy. That's a no-brainer. That makes a lot of sense.
And just in the sense of being able to be part of the partnership, I think one of the things we're also hearing from operators when it comes to value-based care is that by being part of things like the Servium Care Network or the Perennial Consortium, by being part of a group similar to how a GPO might add value to an operator for finding cost efficiencies, a value-based care alliance can really help establish these care outcomes and to really have an operator's sense of being part of the clinical journey. So when you're thinking of challenges as it relates to being part of a value-based care partnership, like what you had just mentioned and what Benchmark is joining with Servium, what are some of the challenges there? Do you think having that safety in numbers, if you will, being able to be a part of a group that's a partnership really brings more benefit to the table and more value in the years ahead? Would love to know just what some of the challenging aspects are from an operator's perspective, just on getting in the door and being able to look at these partnerships in ways that can help improve resident outcomes.
Well, I guess I might respond to that a little differently by saying that I think we thought it was, when we looked at the alternative of doing it ourselves, we thought it made a lot more sense, would be a lot easier for us to do it as part of the alliance, where they've already been spending a lot of time figuring out, the ways to put these things, the relationships together, the systems together, and so on, than us trying to, pioneer that ourselves. So we figured, given those two choices, we thought it was much easier to join the alliance and ride the coattails of what work they've already done. And we have a lot of respect for the Servium team and the thought that's gone into it, the people that are involved. So while there, I'm sure, will be some startup hiccups of us joining, to date, they've been wonderful to work with. Their training and startup team has been excellent to work with. We're still pretty early on. Again, our community just opened a couple months ago. So, again, ask me in 6 months, and I'll tell you how that experience has been. But to date, it's been wonderful. It's still early. But, again, compared to the alternative of us, starting from scratch and figuring it out ourselves, we thought this was the easier approach. And to date, I think that's been the case.
And just more broadly, let's take a step back. And when you're thinking about value-based care, obviously you touched on the value it will add to for Benchmark in terms of improving the resident experience and improving their care. I think that's one of the central tenets of value-based care is to improve these outcomes and to really bring operators closer to that process. So when you're thinking about where value-based care in senior living is headed, where do you see the effort moving? Because I think it's been part of the conversation for some time now, especially in a post-pandemic environment, of operators really wanting to own that care journey more closely. So when you're thinking about just where value-based care is headed in senior living, what are some of the things you're thinking about?
Well, I think I'm thinking about the very things that you spoke about. So one, I'm thinking about how can we improve the resident experience? How can we coordinate care better? How can we improve outcomes? How can we have a better a sense of ways to bring specialists in a way that we have better information about? Because right now people go to the ER or go to their specialists and we have little to no information about what their care, what care is being delivered or what recommendations are being made. So now with more integration in it, we can help provide better care on our end, as well as work more closely with the specialists and so on. So that's going to be, I think, a huge improvement for everybody, for the resident, for our care staff, for the doctors involved. I think it'll help improve the education. Well, one of the things that we find is, notwithstanding how long assisted living communities have been around, the medical professionals still have little idea of what we do or who we can serve.
Right.
So I think that'll be a big benefit. You know, I think, again, what role various providers choose to play in taking risk, I think individual providers will have to determine. But I think it's a great improvement just by virtue of those initial steps right off the bat. So, To me, we're rolling out medical records throughout our whole company now. It's a big initiative we've undertaken separate and apart from just the Servium Alliance we're doing in Alexandria. And, you know, that's a big improvement in and of itself. So that'll also position us better throughout our company to be able to play in other value-based care alliances that may exist, we may choose to participate in. So, again, clearly more integration with the healthcare continuum is part of all of our futures, and we're embracing it and looking forward to it.
Definitely. And we'll be watching along because I think there's quite some evolution that's happening, especially when it comes to value-based care and how operators are really thinking about it. So really appreciate your thoughts there. And now I want to take you back to a pre-pandemic time, 2019, when you had said that you had felt that at the time Benchmark had sort of lost its quote mojo, referring to a comment you had made to Senior Housing News back in 2019. Would love to know just how since then, obviously a lot's happened, but how do you see the future evolution of Benchmark playing out? Would love to know just when you're thinking about growth, what do you really think about? Because I know you've also mentioned that the size Benchmark is at is a good size and you're not really looking to get too much bigger than what you're at now. So where do you see the future evolution of Benchmark playing out? What do you think about when you're thinking about growth?
Well, first of all, I'm pleased to say we've got our mojo back in spades. I think our business is the strongest it's been now in 10 or 15 years. So we're sort of on fire at the moment and having great fun. So I'm pleased to say that comment is in the rearview mirror, and we're having great fun and things are going great. I think our focus right now is really on our core portfolio and our occupancy. We're back over 90%. We're virtually every metric I can tell you about is a green arrow pointing up. We've got occupancy continuing to grow. We've got rates are strong. Resident satisfaction is strong. Associate engagement is strong. Our quality scores are strong. And all our green arrows, as I say, pointing up. Almost everything I can think of is strong. Margins have not quite fully recovered, but we're making progress on that. I think that's a pretty consistent message. We've gotten rid of agency. We're almost, over time, we've almost completely gotten back to a more stabilized level. So we've got a handful of communities where we need to continue to get that removed, but we're almost there. So we're feeling very good. But our primary focus is our core portfolio, our existing communities. And yet we're also we're implementing a number of foundational infrastructure things throughout our company. I mentioned we're rolling out electronic medical records throughout all of our communities. We're going to be implementing an HR information system throughout all of our communities later this year. We're rolling out a facilities information system later this year. We're going to be changing a CRM later this year. So we're doing a whole bunch of foundational infrastructure things, which are really terrific for us, going to be really position us to have a greater handle on our data. And again, all with a focus of improving the customer and associate experience, which is our primary focus. We're also doing a major CapEx program throughout more than 30 of our communities to either do major renovations in four of our communities or refreshes in about 30 of our communities. So we're spending a lot of money on CapEx thanks to the support of our capital partners. So we've got a lot going on that's all about sort of our infrastructure and our existing portfolio. At the same time, we opened Alexandria. We're going to be opening another community later this year in Mount Pleasant, New York. And we're getting ready to start construction on two new development projects, which we're pleased to be able to get the financing in place for those. That's not something that many people can do, so we're pleased that our track records allowed us to secure that financing. So we're feeling very bullish about where we are and what we've got going on.
And you had just mentioned Mount Pleasant. That was one of the areas I had wanted to touch on, because I had talking about how Benchmark is able to continue development right now is really important, because like you had said, you have bring the track record of proving the past projects Benchmark has been involved with. Would love to know just why you're thinking about development now, and if you're able to obviously have the financing and to make it work, but why push on development now? Is it because there's so few new builds right now? You think you can kind of capitalize and deal with the bit higher interest rate right now because you want to be able to be ahead of the development curve that could come back if interest rates go a bit down? Would love to get your philosophy behind being able to continue development now in a historically challenging environment.
Yeah, we obviously would love to have construction costs come down and interest rates come down. And yet our view is there are certain markets where there's aging inventory and strong demand. And to the extent we can offer a new product in a strong market in a time where there's been a little new supply brought on, we think that's a good opportunity. So that's exactly the situation in Alexandria and in Mount Pleasant and the couple of markets where we're going to be starting construction soon.
And I know that understanding just in terms of the relationship with capital partners, I think is something that is central to really being able for an operator to continue to grow and to support future growth. And at a NIC panel last year, you were on a panel with Tanigal from Merrill Gardens and Richard Hutchinson with Discovery Senior Living, in which you had discussed kind of the minority ownership structure that Benchmark uses. Does that help inform your thinking on supporting future growth? And then I want to touch on, we'll get to talking about kind of that relationships with capital partners as well.
Well, our strategy has been throughout our history to be primarily a joint venture model. So we have ownership positions in virtually all of our communities, and we're believers in the joint venture model, and that has served us well over our history. So we very rarely do third-party management contracts. We've never done a sale-leaseback, so we've always done joint venture structures, and that's just sort of how we've built our company and the model that we believe in, and we continue to believe in it. So we've worked with a number of different capital partners and have done repeat business with all of them, and are blessed with some very strong long-term relationships that we're very lucky to have, and work hard to keep those partnerships strong.
Definitely. And I know during the panel, too, you also had cautioned operators to really consider the values and goals of aligning with capital partners. From where you sit today, has that advice changed at all?
And no, in fact, I think it's become even more important as I watch all the capital partners shuffling up communities to different operators and all the rest. I think it's I think it's reinforces the importance of that, because I think it's a shame watching some of the operator shuffling going on that is so destructive to operators. Obviously, a capital partner has the right to insist on good performance for their assets from the operators that they're with. But this business about, you know, dumping operators and going to others, I think, is, first of all, not realistic to expect small operators to take on large numbers of communities and expect good performance from any of them. A few are able to do that, and kudos to those few, but many are not going to be able to keep up with the dramatic growth that they're being asked to take on. And so I think it's unrealistic to expect small operators to take on large numbers of communities and expect to get the performance that the capital partners must be expecting. And I know the terms of some of the relationships some of those capital partners are imposing on their new relationships are not friendly. And so I think it's the tenor of the relationships between some of the capital partners and operators has changed in an unfavorable way. And I think that's not good for the industry overall. So I think it's even more important to make sure that the values and principles of the relationship between the capital partners and operators are aligned going forward, as we watch this happen in the industry in a way that I think is unfortunate.
Right. And I appreciate the color there, because I think getting your perspective, having been in the industry for so long and seen so many different cycles, I think understanding your perspective is really important in kind of understanding where we're at today when it comes to those key relationships between capital and operators. So appreciate that. And now, when in the last 5 minutes we have left here, would love to touch on, I know you mentioned the occupancy recovery being at 90% occupancy across the portfolio. What have been some of the biggest factors impacting occupancy recovery right now? Has it been just being able to capture new demand? Would love to know, what are some of the driving factors behind the recovery?
Well, I actually said we were over 90%, but I think it's frankly a great team here. I think it's been a strong focus on execution. We've kept our eye on the ball and worked very hard at rebuilding occupancy. I think the way we handled ourselves through COVID reinforced our strong reputation. We did not accomplish the occupancy growth by cutting rates. We've been able to do so by virtue of building on our quality reputation and how we handled ourselves during COVID and in the past. So I'm pleased to report that we did it by sort of the right way, not by sort of buying occupancy, if you will. We're in good markets with good assets. And again, we're making investments in improving those assets, and people see the long tenure of our company and the fact that we're investing in them in appropriate ways. And we're known to be an employer of choice. I think all the sort of right quality things that people look for, I think, has paid off.
Definitely. And obviously, being able to have that occupancy gain takes a lot of different departments to be able to come together and to help execute on the message, to be able to capture new demand and to bring new prospects into communities and to execute on that day in and day out. So when you're thinking about staffing, is there any areas within staffing that remain a challenge? We've heard this year from operators that retention and turnover are still kind of two lingering issues, but other areas are starting to soften a little bit. What areas on staffing are most a challenge for Benchmark right now, and how are you working to solve those?
Yeah, I've mentioned we've eliminated agency and have almost brought overtime back to a stabilized level. So for us, it's recruitment and retention will sort of always be things we're focused on. And I think internal talent development is something we've really turned our attention to, so we can reduce the number of folks who are bringing in from outside the company and promoting more from within. We've always done reasonably well, but I think we want to sort of increase our focus on that going forward. So that's our primary focuses going forward.
And with that leadership development, we know that that's something, too, operators have really been thinking about. Rather than being able to bring in outside talent, they're trying to lift up their own talent of what right. they have just because of the operational know-how of the staff being familiar with the culture and things like that. So interesting to hear you mention that. Just in the little bit of time left, I would love to talk about the rest of 2024 and what that might look like for Benchmark. You want, from an operations perspective, you want to talk priorities about the coming 6 months for since we're at the midpoint. What are you really thinking about from an operations standpoint when you're thinking about priorities for the remainder of 2024?
Well, I'd say we're focused on the two or three things I've mentioned. One is core portfolio performance. We want to make sure we're continuing to execute on improving occupancy and margin of our existing properties. Secondly, we've got a number of key initiatives we're rolling out: electronic medical records, HR information systems, large CapEx program. We're focused on doing those right and not in a way that's disruptive and making sure we're implementing them correctly. Third, we're focused on talent matters, as making sure that we're getting the right talent and doing the talent development initiatives I spoke about. And fourth, we've got some the new communities that I mentioned. We want to make sure we're opening those correctly and getting them off to the right start, and so on. So I think those are really the focuses operationally for the balance of this year.
Well, Tom, I've really enjoyed your conversation with me today. Thank you so much for joining us here on Transform.
Nice chatting with you, Austin.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.